Whether I'm worried about hosting or just giving that perfect gift, creating a delicious holiday for my loved ones is super important to me. From effortless holiday hostings to unforgettable gifts, Omaha Steaks delivers the world's best steak experience. They've always been super convenient in giving me the most high-quality steaks I could ask for, whether for myself or a loved one. Omaha Steaks offers unrivaled quality and variety, and every bite is backed by their 100% guarantee. Save big on gourmet gifts and more holiday favorites with Omaha Steaks. Visit omahasteaks.com, and for an extra $35 off, use code YUM at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code YUM. Go to omahasteaks.com and use code YUM at checkout for an extra $35 off. Minimum purchase may apply. See site for details. A big thanks to our advertiser, Omaha Steaks.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Welcome to Consequence Uncut, a series that gives listeners and readers a deeper dive into our features with major artists.
For this episode, we're talking to Genesis Owusu for Consequence's August Cosine.
When I was a kid, I used to write short stories, and then I transitioned to poetry, and then I transitioned to music and making albums and projects. And I realized I've just been a storyteller the whole time, but the medium has just changed.
So, another episode of Consequence Uncut. I'm Mijon, lead podcast producer at Consequence.
And I'm Jonah, an editorial coordinator here at Consequence.
So, Jonah, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much. I'm excited to join and make my first Consequence Uncut debut.
I know. We have more than two writers that work for Consequence. Like, we're such a large organization at this point.
I know. I can't wait for the Christmas party.
Like all three of us.
Yeah. On Zoom.
No. But kudos to you for this interview. I had so much fun editing, listening to it. And there's something so poetic about, you know, the medium that you're using to record it crashing while you're trying to have a conversation about existential crises and like COVID and like the world shutting down.
Yeah, I think, it's hard to say that that was God talking to us because we're talking about existentialism. So just, you know, maybe that was Sisyphus himself dropping the boulder and crashing the Zoom servers. And you know, that's the job. Sometimes things go great when you're a music journalist, and sometimes it's 9 o'clock on a Wednesday and you're troubleshooting and you end up just getting a call from Australia.
From a mystery number, and you're like, are you trying to steal my life?
There's too many digits here.
I know, right?
How's this happening?
Yeah, so listeners, we do have to explain that because Genesis had to call in, there's a slightly different timbre to the interview, but it is deep and wonderful nonetheless.
You can just pretend like it's your morning commute and you have AM radio on.
Yeah, literally. No, but this conversation was so great. I can't believe you have a philosophical tattoo.
I know. I can't believe that I actually admitted it.
And what was so great is like, you know, because as someone that like speaks French as a second language, you can't study like higher level French without studying Albert Camus and maybe like a little bit of Kafka. And it was just so funny to see that channeled into music.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and you know what? Kudos to you, because I tried to learn French, partly inspired by my high school obsession with Camus, and it didn't go so well. So you know, maybe after this, I can have you tutor me.
I know. No, but the interview was so great because, you know, like I was wondering like what happened to artists during COVID. Like, did they just kind of like close up shop, or were they actually like taking that time to really create like something as great as this new album?
Yeah. Yeah. And something that was interesting to me too, that I found myself reflecting on, you know, since I talked to him, was how, you know, his first record was mostly pulled together during like the height of the pandemic. So, you know, he's in his room, he's whatever, he's not seeing people. And that was more of his like just collection of, I hate to call it a collection of songs album, but less like structurally, cohesively one thing. Mm-hmm. Where this one, he wrote a lot of it on the road and in conjunction with COVID and everything like that. And this one is the one that is like straight down the line, like concept album, narrative, there's a character, there's arcs. Like, it's crazy to me that the one that was produced in multiple different cities is the one that has like the one singular vision, and the one that was just him like making sense of all the time he had on his hands was the one that was a little bit more scatterbrained.
Yeah. I mean, there's something so real about the way that he articulated that usually that first album, kind of like Alanis Morissette, is just like everything that's wrong in your life. And then after that, that's where the real work begins, where you actually have to say, okay, I've like basically like put my heart and soul out there, but now I still need to make music to like support myself.
Yeah. And it's like he said in the interview, it's funny. His manager comes to him and says, you know, hey, let's have a conversation. This next one might need to be a little bit more commercially viable. And then he sets out to do that and accidentally writes a concept album about a roach trying not to get squished by the foot of God. So, but you know what? We joke about that in the interview, but especially going back to listen to it after we talk, it's crazy how much fun some of these songs actually are. And like, you almost can see it like breaking through to a top 20 Billboard or something. You're like, gosh, this is a weird existential left field genre mess. But like, why am I bumping so hard right now?
I know. I mean, it's almost like when the Flaming Lips had like the audacity to make like a whole album about Yoshimi fighting giant robots. And like, you were like, wait, what the hell are they doing? But then like, you listen to it and you're like, no, this is great. Like, this is a classic album, you know?
I think that's a great comparison. I really do.
So everyone get really excited for the new Yoshimi. It's now a roach.
It's now a roach. And the robots are God.
Yeah, literally.
So please enjoy my conversation with Genesis Owusu. You can also check out the full Cosign article on consequence.net. There is a link in the show notes. And please subscribe to the podcast feed to stay up to date with these in-depth interviews.
And please, please, please leave us a review. We want to know what you think. We want to make sure that we're improving the podcast, and it helps other people find the podcast and enjoy it themselves. And if you don't like the podcast, don't leave a review, because we don't like that.
I can't handle it. Please.
I know. No bad reviews. Leave good reviews. Thank you.
Don't make fun of my tattoo, please.
If you leave a review, we will post an image of the tattoo in the article.
If this gets X amount of likes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now I'll turn it over to Jonah and Genesis for this interview. Please enjoy.
So something that I always kind of like to start off asking when it's an artist who is coming out with their sophomore release, coming into it, if there was ever any anxiety or maybe a voice in the back of your head that was yelling like sophomore slump at you or any type of worry, like before you had it kind of all pulled together. Obviously, yeah. You know how it worked out now, but at least before, you know, however.
Yeah, no, like all kinds of external pressures, but I think mainly internal desires to top what I had come out with my debut, but at the same time, just figuring out what I wanted to do and what I wanted to say. As a person, I feel like I'm quite reserved and, you know, I only speak when I feel like I have something to say. With that first album, I feel like I put all of my life experiences that I wanted to talk about into that first album. And then we went through COVID and then I did some touring and then it's like, okay, time to make album two. And it's like, oh shit, like, what am I going to, you know? So there was a long period of time where I was trying to figure out, yeah, what I wanted to say, what was actually going to be genuine and authentic, because, you know, I have a hard time coming to terms with my art as like simply a product that I have to churn out to keep the lights on. But yeah, so that was kind of just like a long period of discovery and learning how to be inspired by new things.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I can imagine that between album one and two, having like the tail end of the pandemic and getting whisked on tour, I know I've talked to a lot of artists that are like, sometimes it's hard to pull from your life because you're not really living like your actual life right then. You're kind of just like either doing work basically, or especially again, like 2021, 2020 locked in.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I personally had to pull from experiences that were outside of life. I got really interested in like books and plays that I'd never read and like how those books and plays explain like philosophies about life that I'd never heard of, like absurdism and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. It was real like like quarter life crisis. What does it mean? The search for an answer to my problems almost became like the point of the album in itself, in a way, because the album kind of goes through the struggle of like figuring out life, like how am I meant to do this in such a chaotic and absurd world? What is the point of me doing it? Is there a point of me doing it? Maybe I can create my own point. Maybe like the chaos and absurdity of life is like the gift in itself. It kind of goes through this existential journey of figuring out life and persisting and surviving through obstacles, which kind of came from the confusion of like, what's the point of me making this music right now? Like, what do I actually want to say? So it kind of all fed into each other.
Yeah. I was actually really excited to ask you about that because I saw how much people like Camus and Kafka influenced the album. And as somebody who went through a heavy Camus and Kafka phase and has like a myth of Sisyphus tattoo that he kind of regrets, but not really. Yeah, it's just like, I was like, I immediately perked up. And then, of course, listening to the record, well, I'm like, yeah, you could totally see it. I mean, even just the roach kind of being the protagonist, it's like, oh, there's the metamorphosis right there.
Yeah, exactly. I read The Metamorphosis for the first time in my life, like last year, to, I'm sure, the delight of all my English teachers back in high school. I immediately just thought it was so hilariously on point to like the world that we live in today, even though it was written decades ago, like how the main character like turns into this huge vermin, and the very first thing he thinks of is like, oh shit, how am I gonna get to work?
How am I gonna get to work?
Like, what's my boss? Yeah, like what's my boss gonna think? Like, I thought that was so on point, like the absurdity of the world that we've been living in for the past few years, like pandemics here in Australia, like bushfires, crazy hail, and like economic downfall, war that we're able to see on our phones every morning. And we're just like, yep, we're on the suit and tie, like keep walking. Like, it's so almost hilariously absurd, but also strangely inspiring, like the stubbornness of like the human will to survive and persevere and just like keep moving on to a new day.
Yeah. And so is that one of the reasons or inspirations where you kind of took like a bigger picture narrative approach to this album? Like, you know, the quote unquote concept album is trying to tell like this Kafka-esque Camusian story.
Yeah, definitely. I felt like in my personal life up until that point, I think I'd said a lot of the things that I'd really wanted to say. So I feel like the way to counteract that without just while staying true and genuine to something that I would actually want to say.
Whether I'm worried about hosting or just giving that perfect gift, creating a delicious holiday for my loved ones is super important to me. From effortless holiday hostings to unforgettable gifts, Omaha Steaks delivers the world's best steak experience. They've always been super convenient in giving me the most high-quality steaks I could ask for, whether for myself or a loved one. Omaha Steaks offers unrivaled quality and variety, and every bite is backed by their 100% guarantee. Save big on gourmet gifts and more holiday favorites with Omaha Steaks. Visit omahasteaks.com, and for an extra $35 off, use code YUM at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code YUM. Go to omahasteaks.com and use code YUM at checkout for an extra $35 off. Minimum purchase may apply. See site for details. A big thanks to our advertiser, Omaha Steaks.
Just to go bigger picture and just create a story that I felt was more akin to like a more universal struggle rather than just simply a personal one.
I wanted to ask too, like more about the like construction of a concept album. Like, is that freeing in a way? Is it limiting at all? Like, you know, jumping into this rather than just kind of like trying to make a bunch of songs. What was it? The writing and recording process.
I feel like for me, I learned that it's kind of the only way I know how to do it. I literally tried to, you know, I came in like over here in Australia, my first album, Smiling With No Teeth, it did really well critically, which I'm like very happy for. But you know, as prices explode with inflation and blah, 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 like, I'm still technically like living paycheck to paycheck, you could say, but you know, like it's not a stable life. So, you know, me and my manager had a very logical and real conversation about, okay, stay true to yourself, but, you know, maybe we can make something a bit more accessible, something that, you know, can bring some revenue in so you can live a more simple life.
Yeah.
I literally went into the album, okay, yeah, okay, we're gonna make some hits. And then ended up making like an album about a fucking roach trying to run away from God. Like, I thought, like, I realized it was really, I wasn't really like capable of like working like that. I kind of realized that I just want to be a storyteller. And, mm-hmm. you know, when I was a kid, I used to write short stories, and then I transitioned to poetry, and then I transitioned to music and making albums and projects. And I realized I've just been a storyteller the whole time, but the medium has just changed. So yeah, it kind of just went full circle in that sense. And with the start of this album, I literally wrote the story. Like, I wrote the story of the roach running and running and running, trying not to get stepped on by God. And then the album became like, how would this story sound? So that was actually mm-hmm. the process. Like, I wrote the story, and then, you know, in between touring, I was trying to find the time to make the album. So I was making a lot of it in LA and then parts of it in Australia, with a bunch of different really talented producers. Like, you know, a few of the songs were made by the same band that I made Smiling Minnow Teeth with. But then mm-hmm. some of the producers in LA were like these huge pop behemoth like producers, like I'm talking like Maroon 5, Madonna. Like, yeah. they produce like that type of like huge stadium pop. And then, you know, somehow, you know, they wanted to get freaky with me and write albums about roaches, which is sick. So yeah, that's kind of how the process went. It was a lot more like start and stop mm-hmm. and spotty than the first album, where I made it kind of during COVID. So I kind of had all the time and free reign in the world. I kind of had to, yeah, find the time to make it this time.
That's so funny to me that the process being more scattered somehow led it to be more of like a cohesive, I sound like the wrong word because the last album wasn't not cohesive, but like, you know what I mean? Like very yeah. focused in on this thematic arc and this narrative arc. Whereas when you were just at your house during COVID, that was the one that was a little bit more grab bag and everything. That's so funny.
Yeah. 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 It is. I think it's because the last album was pulled from a lot of different experiences in my life. And I kind of used genre and sound as like a pastiche and draw a little collage of, it was like moments in time in my life.
Earlier, we were talking about how, you know, you could consider like a paycheck to paycheck, you know, it's not a super stable gig all the time. So kind of with that in mind, I'm curious what it was like then to step out on Madison Square Garden stage opening for Paramore in front of how many freaking people?
Yeah, it was surreal. I thought it would be like a long time before I got to grace that stage, but, you know, I took the shortcut. So yeah, they were like really lovely people, super hospitable, which is nice because you don't get to say that all the time for artists and bands that big. But yeah, it was surreal. It was kind of cool. It was cool being the support act as well, because it's like, there's an inherent challenge in that. Mm-hmm. You know, coming onto a stage that big with that many people who 99% of them won't know who you are at all, and you kind of have to like explosively and suavely woo them over so that they like could give a fuck about who you are, and yeah, you can convert some fans onto your side, which I think I did every night. But yeah, it was a fun little challenge and a really fun tour and exercise to do with them.
Yeah, yeah. I was even just on like, I don't know, like just doing general research for this and your name popping up on Reddit and stuff, and the Paramore fans were like, no idea who this guy was, but he was awesome. And I was like, it's awesome that he's winning over the Paramore fans, because, you know, I know that you can get pretty hard rocking when you're beat sometimes, but at the same time, you know, it's still quite different than Hayley Williams and her jam.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, luckily, like, I think a lot of their fans were pretty open-minded to seeing and hearing new things. And, you know, we always try and come in with a bang, so I'm glad that quite a few of them appreciated it.
Yeah. And then I know that coming up in just a few months here, you're out on your own headlining gigs, right?
Yeah. Back in the U.S. Going to be very, very wild. Building that show right now, so making sure it is, like, as chaotic and fire and brimstone as it needs to be.
I was going to ask, is there going to be, like, I don't know, some, like, crazy existential stage prop, or the place is going to burn down halfway through and everyone gets to face their own mortality or something nuts?
Yeah, it wouldn't be a Genesis of Lucy show without it.
And something I always like to ask people based out of the U.S. too is if you can tell any difference when you come here in terms of the crowds and how they just react to your music and how they treat each other and what the spaces are like and the vibes of those rooms.
I think it's really, like, city by city. LA crowds are so different to, like, New York crowds. Like, back here in Australia, like, Sydney crowds are so different to Melbourne crowds. It's really interesting to see, going city to city, how even when they like something, how differently they react to how they like something. Like, some people will try to sing along when they know they don't know the lyrics. Like, some people will just, like, scream and headbang. Some people won't do anything until the song ends, and then they erupt. Like, they'll stand completely still until the song ends, and then they're like, ah, that was the greatest shit I've ever seen in my life. So yeah, it's really interesting to see how different cities, show their appreciation.
Yeah, that's so funny. Okay, I did skip one just with all the madness, but going back to the album a little bit right before we wrap up here, I did want to touch on the visual side of it too, because I know you've put a lot of effort into it, and it's really cool. I always love seeing an artist have, like, a whole vision for everything from the cover art to, like, you know, the stage show to even, like, the Instagram and social posts and what you're wearing. And I know you were collaborating with, why is her name losing my mind?
Lisa Rehana.
Yes. And I thought that was so cool. Yeah. So tell me about why you think, you know, the visual side of your work is important and why you put so much effort into it.
It's kind of been a thing that I have done or tried to do for most of my career. And I think it's a thing that comes innately. Like, when I think about music, I naturally think of the big picture. Like, I naturally think, like, what is this going to look like in a video? What clothes sound like this? Like, what moves on stage, like, convey what this sound is like, and vice versa. Like, when I think of a music video idea, sometimes I think of the video idea first, and then I'm like, okay, what sound would suit this visual? Yeah, I kind of always think in a whole package deal, and every medium and facet is kind of just one puzzle piece to the bigger picture. So yeah, so then I just try and execute that. And, you know, with this album cycle, I was lucky enough to work with Lisa Rehana, who's a visual artist. Like, my manager and I found her from this new contemporary art museum in Sydney that opened up, and she had a huge installation there. Like, she's not a, like, Leaving the Light was her first ever music video. Like, she doesn't do that. She does, like, fine art. So it was really cool being able to work with someone on that caliber. Because, yeah, usually I definitely have a hand in, a real deep hand in every facet, which is fun. Mm-hmm. But also it was nice to be able to, like, do what I do best and then kind of pass it off to someone else who does what they do best. Let her put her own spin on how it works visually while I provide her with the music and the conceptual ideas. Yeah, it was really cool bouncing off someone like that.
Man, I'll tell you, just hearing how you build your music up and then the whole world of art around it, you're making me excited for whenever you direct your first movie.
Yeah, man. Wait on it.
Great. All right, well, with that, I'll just open it up just in case there's anything else you want to make sure people know about the record or about the tour or anything. And I'm really fucking excited for people to hear it when the whole thing drops. I think, you know, hearing the singles was really fun, and that's one thing, but just listening top to bottom is like an entirely different beast.
Yeah, thank you, man. Thank you. I appreciate that. I appreciate the support and the kind words. Good to see you in a show.
Yeah, dude, I was just about to say, I hope I can scrounge by. I forget I'm in like deep in the Midwest, and I forget how close you're coming to the Midwest, but I'm going to try my damnedest to get out there.
All right. Hopefully. Fingers crossed.